Module 4, How to Teach Grammar. Section 1. In this module, we'll begin looking at the ways of introducing new language to your students. We'll look at how to quickly assess what students' grammatical needs are, how to analyze a grammatical structure and present it to students, how to effortlessly teach verb tenses, and how to correct students when they make mistakes. Page 2. Section 2, the test-teach-test method as a jumpstart. This is a three-stage approach to presentation that allows the teacher to determine first what the students already know via some form of test or practice activity. You then teach them what they need to know by introducing new grammar or clarifying existing knowledge. Finally, you check what they have learned via a second test or activity. This method can be used for all levels, but it is an especially useful approach at higher levels. The advantages? For you, it shows areas of real problems. For the students, it is challenging and encourages them to draw on their knowledge base. It also highlights clearly for them the gaps in their knowledge, thus focusing immediately on what they need to learn. Moreover, it maximizes student involvement and minimizes teacher talking time. Remember, the first test shouldn't be too difficult. However, the teacher should be thorough and focus on gaps in the student's knowledge. The second test or activity should be different from the first. Page 3, Section 3, Analyzing Grammar Structures. You can analyze any bit of grammar to be taught, like this. 1. What is the form of the structure? 2. What are the function, meaning, and concepts of the structure? And 3. What areas of phonology, that is, the sound of the grammar structure, do the students need to be made aware of? First, let's look at form. This refers to how the piece of grammar is put together, the words it consists of. For example, you should have worked harder. The form is should plus have plus past participle form of the verb. Other examples, should have gone, should have eaten, should have woken up. The form shows us the order of the words and the patterns that are possible. A practical application might be where the teacher can point out the form on the board in a table, or the students can work out the pattern from a series of examples. You can also analyze any bit of grammar to be taught by looking at the meaning, function, and concept. This refers to what the speaker means when he or she uses that particular grammar structure. For example, you should have worked harder. The function is A, you didn't work hard enough. B, that wasn't a good idea. There is no focus here on how the sentence is put together. We are only interested in what it means. The function can be checked or worked out by asking students concept check questions. This simply means that the teacher asks the student questions to check that they have understood the meaning and function of a grammatical structure or item of vocabulary. And finally, you can also analyze any bit of grammar to be taught by looking at the phonology. This refers to the sound of a particular grammar structure when you say it. For example, you should have worked harder. Native speakers tend to connect should and have together to form should've. Students need to be taught how to say the structure naturally in its contracted form so as not to sound stilted. It is also important for them to be aware of how the structure sounds when spoken naturally to help them with listening comprehension. Pronunciation work is best done when the structure is being presented. Students can build confidence and improve their pronunciation skills through drilling and repetition. The next mini-task looks at three example sentences, so you can practice analyzing grammar so you can prepare to begin teaching it. Page 4, Section 4, Presenting Grammatical Structures. In the classroom, we teachers have to show our students how the language is used by us. And the clearest way to do this is to present language in a clear context. For the context to be useful, it has to fulfill several criteria. It should be interesting, be clear, and give extra language and information so that the students can use the structure creatively. Context can be real and connected to the learner's world or simulated. For example, put the conditional structure being used for advice, if I were you, I'd, in the context of a girl giving her best friend advice about her boyfriend. The presentation, practice, production model. There are many teaching methods to choose from, but one of the easiest to use is the presentation, practice, production model. It has the following stages. 1. A lead-in, which creates interest in the topic with a warm-up activity. 2. Presentation, where you teach the meaning, pronunciation, and form. 3. Practice, where you give students the opportunity to try out the structure in a controlled activity. 4. Production, giving students an activity in which they can use the structure meaningfully and creatively in a freer sense. For example, in a role-play situation. Let's look at concept questions. When we teach our students what a grammar structure means, how do we know if our students have understood? One way, of course, is to ask them, and it is very tempting to propose something like, "Do you understand?" or "Is this clear?" The problem with these questions is that despite feeling unsure about what they have just been taught, most students, when confronted with a question like this, are unwilling to admit they don't understand. They will most likely answer, "Yes." As teachers, it is our job to check if students have understood rather than simply ask them. Concept questions can prove very useful in establishing how well students have grasped a concept that has been introduced. They are designed to highlight for the students the meaning of the new language item, be it vocabulary or a grammar structure. To work out what concept questions you should ask in order to teach a particular structure or word, you, as the teacher, must first identify the concept for yourself, including register, if applicable. Register is basically the way we speak and the words we use in a particular social setting. Imagine you are teaching the meaning of the verb managed. You might present it to students in a sentence like this: "I managed to open the window." This sentence means, "I opened the window, but it was difficult." So your concept questions need to address this meaning. You could ask, "Did I open the window?" Yes. "Was it easy?" No. In the sentence, "I'm going to watch a film tonight," the speaker is using "going to" express a decision that was made referring to the future. This decision was made before speaking. It is not a spontaneous one. An example of how we might express a spontaneous decision is, "I'll watch it too," in response to someone who has made a plan, saying, "I'm going to watch that documentary about Africa tonight." The speakers are using different future forms: the will form for a spontaneous decision and the going to form for a plan. Therefore, some useful concept questions for "I'm going to watch a film tonight" are: is the speaker talking about the future? Yes. Did the speaker decide to watch a film before now? Yes. Is this a plan? Yes. The following questions do not help students to understand the meaning of the structure or when it is used, and cannot be answered using the information provided in the model sentence. Therefore, these questions are not useful. What's the film about? Why are you going? By nature, concept questions should be simple to understand and to answer, and they should contain familiar structures. They should not contain the structure word being taught. Most concept questions probably have yes or no answers. You can repeat concept questions anytime during the lesson, especially if you think your students haven't really understood the meaning. You can also write them on the board when you write up the structure or word to serve as a reminder. Page 5. The following tasks from page 5 to page 10 cover concept questions. First, you'll decide which ones are useful and non-useful, and then you'll practice writing your own. Page 11, Section 5. Timelines. When demonstrating how we use tenses and structures to refer to or talk about the past, present, and future, it can be helpful to illustrate these time references by drawing timelines. To create a timeline, draw a horizontal line from left to right to represent past and future time, and a vertical line to represent present time. An X represents when an action or event occurred. A wiggly line represents a continuous action, and very small vertical lines on the timeline represent periods of time, for example, days, weeks, months, or years. For example, in the simple past sentence, "I went to London 2 days ago," the X to the left of the vertical line represents a completed action in the past. In the present continuous sentence, "He's watching TV," a squiggly line going through the vertical line represents a continuous action that is going on now. Now complete the tasks up to page 14, where you can test your knowledge about timelines. Page 14, Section 6, Error Correction. Making mistakes is a necessary part of the language learning process. Indeed, students want to be corrected. Many students feel this is one of the major roles of the teacher. If they don't get corrected, they feel that the teacher is not doing his or her job properly. Correction can come from you, but students can also be encouraged to self-correct and correct each other. This is especially useful in large, mixed ability classes, where it is impossible for the teacher to monitor effectively at all times. This encourages students to be self-critical and attentive to what they're saying. Several things need to be considered: the types of mistakes, the reasons for mistakes, and why, when, and how to correct mistakes. Correction is more complex than simply giving a student the right answer. For the correction to be effective, you need to know why the mistake was made. Then the correction needs to be carried out in a tactful and non-threatening way. Let's look at the types of mistakes. Students can make errors in categories like grammar, vocabulary, pronunciation, spelling, style, and/or register. The reasons for mistakes may include trying to express something that is above the student's level of English. I see film yesterday. The student does not yet know the past simple tense. I saw the film yesterday. If I would go, I would see her. Student does not yet know the third conditional. If I had gone, I would have seen her. Another reason for making a mistake might be the mother tongue interference. Can I have fire? A vocabulary error made by Italian speakers when they want to light their cigarette. It happens because fire is the literal translation of the word they use for light. I live here for 5 years. A grammatical error made by speakers of Romance languages that use a present form of the verb in their mother tongue, where in English we need the present perfect. I have lived here for 5 years. My light hand, or lead coat, instead of right hand, and red coat. For many Japanese speakers, pronouncing R is extremely difficult, and the sound L is used instead. Another reason for making a mistake might be the so-called false friends, or false cognates. These are words that look like they would mean the same thing in two different languages, when in fact they do not. In French, the verb attendre means to wait for. A student might say, I attended for 2 hours, when what they mean is that they waited. Another reason for making a mistake might be overgeneralizations. Errors of this sort occur when students generalize a rule in English to situations when it does not apply. I go to the cinema. The student has applied the rule for regular past tense verbs, ed, and made an overgeneralization to the irregular verb, went. He has 3 childs. The student has made an overgeneralization about how to form plural nouns. And a final reason for making a mistake may be a slip of the tongue. This is language that the student already knows, but for a number of reasons has not used correctly. It may be that the speaker is tired or talking too quickly. Even native speakers make slips of the tongue when speaking their first language. Page 15. How to correct. This is the most important aspect of error correction. We're there to support our students, so we must never laugh at or embarrass a student. Avoid overcorrecting one particular student. If possible, try to involve the whole class. Make sure your manner is helpful and encouraging. When to correct. You should correct certain errors at certain stages of the lesson. At the presentation and controlled practice stages, correct target language straight away. You don't want errors to become reinforced at this early stage. Other errors can be ignored, as you don't want it to detract from the target structure or destroy a student's confidence. When a correction is needed, consider the flow of the lesson. Some activities involve an uninterrupted stream of conversation, so make notes as you monitor the student and go through them at a later stage. That is, unless errors are causing a barrier to effective communication, in which case deal with them immediately. Methods of correction. Let the student finish the sentence, then indicate there has been an error by highlighting missed words with hand gestures, offering a puzzled facial expression, repeating the student's words up to the point of the error, indicating with your voice, that is, stressing the incorrect word, identifying the type of error, for example, you could say tense, asking the student to repeat, or indicating with a gesture, for example, a gesture for past tense would be pointing over your shoulder. Encourage the student to self-correct if possible. They will remember better this way. Page 16. Now complete the following tasks, which will take you to the end of Module 4.